fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Howdy, everybody. It is September the 8th. It's the birthday of Our Lady. So happy birthday, Mama Mary. 1-888-914-9149 is the toll-free line to call for the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. 888-914-9149. You can also follow me on Twitter at Cale Clark. And the Cale Clark Show account is at Cale Clark Show. Not very creative, but it works. The email address is unchanged, Cale, at relevantradio.com. And you know what? It is September. We know this because we've been playing the Earth, Wind, and Fire song ad nauseum. It never gets old. It never gets old. Some of you might disagree, but you're wrong. You're wrong. It's a great tune. One of the greatest of all times. And of course, not only is it September, we've got football season starting up. Rich Gannon, with the NFL season starting tomorrow night, Thursday night. Rich Gannon, former NFL MVP and huge Relevant Radio fan, is going to be joining me for part of the program tomorrow for an NFL preview. Can't wait for that. School is back in session, and that includes colleges and universities. And I got to ask you, Producer Lucas, what do you think? Speaking of universities, we can't forget one of the most venerable institutions out there, an Ivy League school. No, not Harvard. We talked about Harvard and its atheist chaplain recently. But I'm talking about Yale. I'm talking about Yale in New Haven, Connecticut. Do you know, Producer Lucas, what is the most popular course that's ever been taught at Yale University over the last 300 years?
I don't know. But if I had to take a guess, would it have to do something with religion because of its founding?
Actually, no. Okay. That'd be nice if that were the case. But the most popular course that's ever been taught at Yale was a course that is currently in session. It's called Psychology and the Good Life. It's basically a course on happiness, and it's taught by Dr. Lori Santos. It's such a really, really cool story, because obviously happiness is something that people are searching for all the time, in all places, in all times. And St. Thomas Aquinas says that the reason why anybody does anything is because they're trying to be happy. Even criminals, they commit crimes because they think somehow it's going to make them happier. But we know that you really can't be happy apart from God. But Professor Lori Santos started teaching this course recently, and actually the pandemic, which popped up obviously last year in 2020, that just exacerbated the problems that people were having finding happiness. So this course is unreal, and I'm going to tell you exactly how many people attend this course. You're going to be shocked, but this is the one college course that you would never miss, even if it was a morning class, even if you were hungover from going out too late and partying too hard the night before. And of course, the first thing you would do before going to class is going to confession, because, of course, drunkenness is a sin. It's a serious sin. It really is. College students out there, anybody out there, you need to know this. It's a mortal sin. So you'd go to confession, first of all. You'd never do it again. And you'd go straight to this class called Psychology and the Good Life. So one of the things that she points out, and she wrote an article about this in Newsweek magazine recently, because a lot of people are curious about this class and by the way, you can take this class. You don't have to go to Yale to take it. I'm going to explain how in just a minute. But she wrote in Newsweek magazine about how a lot of us realize that we need to manage our stress. We need to manage our emotions during tough times, or else they're going to manage us. And the problem is that most people, when they try to do that, when they try to get happier, they go about it in completely the wrong ways. And she also has, Lori Santos has a podcast called The Happiness Lab. Apparently, I've never listened to it, so I can't give it my good housekeeping seal of approval or anything like that. But one of the things that she said in Newsweek is that our minds have a really, really bad intuition about what we ought to do to become happier and feel better. So even when we try to put in some work to improve our well-being, it often doesn't work because we're doing it wrong. So she started gathering a whole bunch of scientific findings about how to improve your own happiness. And this is from a secular point of view, to be sure. And so I need to kind of tweak her findings a little bit. I'm going to correct the professor here, and all, but it's totally from a secular point of view. And she's going to give, I'm going to share these with you, the five takeaways, the five things that she shares with her students about how to be happier. I think you can put these to use right away. But she started collecting these findings way before COVID started. It was back in 2018. And she actually took on a new role at Yale University as the head of college. And that actually meant that she had to live with the students on campus. And that allowed Professor Lori Santos to see their lives up close and personal. And she saw how stressed out they were. She saw the mental health crisis on campus. And I don't think it's any different in the workplace. Anxiety, people were lonely. The students were stressed out. They're worried about their grades. And it wasn't just at Yale either. They did a survey of college students across the United States back in 2018. Again, this is pre-pandemic. Imagine how much worse it is now. In 2018, this survey that was done across the U.S. of college students reported that more than 40% of students were so depressed that it became extremely difficult for them even to function. More than 60% had experienced what they classified as overwhelming anxiety. And 1 in 10 seriously considered even committing suicide. That is just terrible. So this is what drew Dr. Lori Santos to really start up this course. She tried to do something to help. So she created this class on the science of happiness. And I think there's an art to science as well as a science. Sorry, there's an art to happiness as well as a science to happiness. We'll talk about that in just a minute. But she wanted to give students practical, evidence-based tips for how to be happier, how to improve their well-being, how to reduce their stress. And get this, over 1,000 students showed up for the first week of class. That's incredible. That's incredible. On a university campus for 1,000, you don't get more than 1,000 students to show up for anything but maybe a football game or a huge, you know, sort of raving party or something on the quad. But over 1,000 students attended this class the first week they had it. In fact, so many students showed up, they had to actually move it. They had to move the venue to a concert hall. And it became the largest class in the history of Yale. At one point, just under a quarter of the entire student body was registered for this class. That's 25%. That's unbelievable. So it became so popular that Yale decided, you know what, we need to share this outside of the school. So they put up a six-week version of the course, and it's called The Science of Well-Being, and so that anybody could access this. So this is on a website called Coursera.org, and that's spelled C-O-U-R-S-E-R-A, Coursera.org. And anybody in the world can sign up for free to take the free version of this course, and hundreds of thousands of people have done it. And believe me, hundreds of thousands initially signed up. And again, that was all before COVID. So up to this point, more than 3 million people have now signed up to take this class, this Ivy League class about how to be happier. So the online class doubled, it tripled, it octupled. But did it really work? Did it really work? Does taking a scientific approach to trying to be more happy, did that actually help during this past year, during the pandemic? And you're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, 1-888-914-9149 is the toll-free number to call to talk to me on the show. We're talking about the science of happiness. I'm talking about a class, the most popular class in the history of Yale University. And the professor of this class, Dr. Lori Santos, has been kind enough to share her top five tips for how to be happier stemming from this course. So did it really work? Well, they're doing a bunch of data analysis, reviewing, and she kind of doesn't have all the stats yet, but she does know, at least anecdotally, that it is helping. And she got a message from, Dr. Lori Santos got a message from the admin assistant in the psychology department at Yale, where she teaches. And the message was, your mailbox is overflowing. And there's more mail on the countertop, too. Can you please stop by at some point? In other words, can you please get down here and clear out your mail? Because this is ridiculous. So she thought it was going to be kind of junk mail, ads, that sort of thing, flyers, because of all the COVID restrictions on campus, she was kind of avoiding going to pick up her office mail. But instead, what she actually found was letter after letter from people writing to thank her. And she said she cried when she read hundreds of stories about her students using what she taught to be happier, even through the anxiety, the frustration of the pandemic. And one story in particular really stood out to her. And it was from Susan, who was an 81-year-old woman, a retired teacher. And she spent most of the year 2019 dealing with the death of her husband. She was kind of at his bedside as he lay dying throughout most of 2019. And he died on Christmas Eve of that year. And she wrote saying that they'd been in love since they were in the seventh grade. And she said he was the kindest, sweetest, and most handsome man she had ever met. And she was devastated when he passed away, obviously her best friend for pretty much her entire life. And she thought things couldn't possibly get worse than the death of her husband, but then it did, because then COVID hit. And so this 81-year-old woman named Susan wrote to Professor Dr. Lori Santos saying, "Your Psychology of Happiness course was a godsend." So she put all these ideas into practice, and it didn't obviously totally get rid of her loss. You can't get rid of that loss, but it gave her the tools that she needed to really cope with everything that was going on. And she's a lot happier than she otherwise would have been. So here are the five tips. Here are the five tips from Dr. Lori Santos from her class on happiness at Yale, the most popular class that's ever been taught at that venerable Ivy League school. Number five, and I think we can jump in on this. We can take note of these. And again, these are only from a secular point of view. They're only from a secular point of view. We need to mix in some faith with this too. We need to mix in our Catholic faith with these tips. But I think we can make use of these, because all truth is God's truth, right? And we can take some of these tips and we can add our faith to it. We can mix it up. We can stir it up. No, actually, we won't want to stir it up. I prefer for it to be shaken, not stirred, just like James Bond. But at any rate, one of the cruelties of COVID-19 is that for a lot of people, it, you know, for pretty much most of a year, and now going into a third wave here, fourth wave, I forget which wave we're in right now, but the Delta variant, being with other people has been something that we've really missed. And so that's tip number five from Professor Lori Santos. Get social. So there are two psychologists who studied people who score the highest on happiness surveys. And the ones that were in the 10th percentile, the highest 10th percentile on happiness surveys, there's one thing that set these happy people apart from the rest of us. Happy people were more social. And in fact, this was such a strong correlation that these guys said, and these psychologists, their names were Ed Diener and Marty Seligman, they said that you have to be around other people to be very high on your happiness score. And so we kind of know this anecdotally. Sometimes it's good to get alone, sort out your thoughts, to pray, but being around other people makes us feel better when we're going through a tough time. And social distancing obviously made this really, really tough, but people found creative ways around it. Having socially distanced walks with their neighbors, using tools like FaceTime, online meeting places like Zoom. And there's a lot of Zoom fatigue, of course. But hey, a lot of people have started virtual gatherings and in many places around the world. People have been able to resume normal activities, but not everywhere. Obviously, with these waves and waves of COVID, we seem to be back to a lot of the social distancing and restrictions in some places. But virtual get-togethers. And Producer Lucas, when are we going to have this virtual disco night for September with Earth, Wind, and Fire? When are we doing this?
To be determined. I'll to be send determined. You the details okay. In a little bit. And you are welcome to join as well. You who are listening to this. So
We'll set it up. We are threatening to do this. But anyways, that's tip number five. Get social. We need this to be happy at some level. The fourth tip that she gives, I'm going to count them down here, is to give thanks. And a dose of gratitude, she says, stopping to consider all the good things in your life is a great way to supercharge your happiness and your well-being. So it hasn't always been easy, especially over the last year or so. But when you show your gratitude, when you literally count your blessings, there's a lot of benefit to it. They've actually done studies on it, and people who are grateful, not only are they happier in general, but they actually have lower levels of stress hormones in their system, like cortisol. Also, healthcare workers have been under a lot of stress and strain on the front lines. Healthcare workers who keep a gratitude journal, they have much lower levels of stress and depression. People who experience chronic pain, if they practice gratitude, talk about things that they're thankful for, they show improvements in sleep quality and in their mood, even though they're experiencing a lot of pain. And that makes sense to me from a faith perspective, because we're often told that when we pray, especially when we're kind of in this conversational prayer with God, we can use this acronym for prayer, ACTS, like the Acts of the Apostles, A-C-T-S. And the A stands for adoration. We're adoring God for his great qualities. The C stands for confession, confess our sins to him. The T stands for thanksgiving, and the S stands for supplication. That's when we ask God for our needs. But we don't want to spend all our time asking God for what we need. He knows what we need, of course. We should tell him that in our prayer, but we also want to do the other three. And so, and I've told this before, I've asked my spiritual director, you know, what do you do for adoration and prayer? And he said that adoration and thanksgiving, it's pretty much the same thing. When you thank God for the gifts he's given you, it's a way of adoring him. And I always like that. So if we do this, if we actually keep sort of a prayer journal, we write down every day some things that we're thankful for, three or five things every day, it'll put us in a much, much better place, I think, in terms of happiness. I think that's true. So we're looking through these five tips from this most popular class ever taught at Yale University by Dr. Lori Santos. And so that's what she recommends to do. Grab a notebook, just jot down 3 to 5 things that you're grateful for every day. It's really, really simple, but it'll have a big, big payoff for you. Tip number three, be in the moment. Be in the moment. And this is something that our minds tend to do. They tend to wander. Your mind wanders at mass. Does that ever happen to you? It happens to me almost every day. I must confess, and it's embarrassing to say this, but I have blanked out even at the moment, even at the time of the consecration. I've been thinking about the craziest things, and our minds can wander, and it can happen at any time during the day. And one study by a team at Harvard found that we spend more than 40% of our time mind wandering. That's unbelievable. More than 40% of our time is spent with our minds wandering, not paying attention to the present moment, to the here and now. We're thinking about the past, maybe regretfully or ruefully, or maybe we're savoring it. We're thinking about the future, stuff that hasn't gotten here yet, stuff that hasn't happened yet. And that's bad news when it comes to being happy, because this growing research shows that when we focus on the present moment, it makes us feel better. So it's interesting that science is discovering this purely from, you know, a secular point of view. But I think as Catholics, we kind of know this instinctively, that we've got to get our minds back to the present moment. And she recommends, Dr. Lori Santos, taking up meditation, which is obviously a pretty secular way of looking at it. And there's lots of meditation apps out there, like Headspace and things like that. And she loves doing meditation. And it boosts your concentration, your mood levels. We would say go to prayer. Don't meditate. But if you're going to meditate, meditate on God's word. Pray. And there's a lot of prayers that we can pray to just focus on God being in the present moment, in the present situation. We can use the Serenity Prayer. My wife says, it sounds cheesy, but it really does work. You know, give me the grace to... what's the Serenity Prayer, Lucas? Do you know that? Okay, the Serenity Prayer is that God give me the... I think it's give me the grace to accept the things that I can't change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And grant me serenity over everything. I think that's the idea. I know those aren't the exact words, but I thought you had that like taped to your mirror, Lucas, but the Serenity Prayer. Mostly because you have to work with me every day.
Oh, no, I have lyrics from a Justin Bieber song I posted.
Yeah, that I believe. That I believe. But the Jesus prayer, right? Lord Jesus Christ, Son of the living God, have mercy on me, a sinner. Jesus, I trust in you. That's a simple prayer from the Divine Mercy Chaplet. You know, this is it. Just realizing that God's in the present moment. And that's why they call it a gift, because it's the present. As cheesy as that sounds, the past is gone. We have to entrust that to God's mercy. The future isn't here yet. And you're worried about the future because you're not there yet. And God hasn't given you the grace to deal with that yet. What's going to happen tomorrow? Jesus talks about this in the Sermon on the Mount. You know, sufficient unto the day is the trouble thereof. So just worry about today. God's going to be with you now and tomorrow. Just to trust that to him. It's going to take care of itself. So not that we don't have to plan. We do. We have to have foresight. But we really want to focus on the present moment. We can often miss that. So one of the things that we can do is she recommends savoring things. And that can help us to be present. And even really, I think, focus on God's presence too. So she talks about committing to noticing the taste of your morning coffee, or even how nice a warm shower feels. The simple act of intentionally noticing afresh what the world around you looks like, sounds like, feels like, that can help you remember that there are good things all around if you take a little time to pay attention. We can see God in these things, the goodness of creation. You know, take a walk through the woods and just kind of maybe focus on the birds chirping or something like that, or just noticing a tree. There's so many things that we can do to savor what's going on around us, the present moment, use our senses. And really, as philosophers tell us, all knowledge that we have about God comes through the senses, which is something that kind of blew my mind when I first thought about it. But it's true. It really is true. So we're going through this list of the top five tips from the lady who teaches the most popular course at Yale, a course on happiness, how we can be happy. What does science tell us? And I'm kind of adding in a little bit of faith too, shaking it up. So we're going to take a really quick break right now on the Cale Clark Show. We'll come back with the top two in just a minute. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Faith, facts, and fun. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
All right. Well, it's not the 21st night yet, but it is the 8th. It's also the birthday of Our Lady. Hope you're having a happy day. And that song always makes you feel happy. We're talking about how to be happier on the Cale Clark Show. There's a lot of bad news out there. A lot of hand-wringing, a lot of teeth gnashing, but we want you to smile. Relax and smile a little bit. And there's a lot to be happy about, especially when it comes to our faith. But I'm talking about an article that was written by the professor who teaches the most popular course in the history of Yale University, Dr. Lori Santos. It's a course on the science of happiness, and 25% of the student body at one point was enrolled. Millions more have taken the free version, which is offered through Coursera.org. And we're kind of counting down her top five takeaways from the course that she teaches, which she was kind enough to write an article about and share with the rest of the world. And so let's go to number two. Number two. So this is her second tip. Rest and move. Rest and move. And she says, when my students ask me what's the first step they should take to be happier, my answer is always the same. Get some sleep. Get some sleep. And hopefully we're not putting you to sleep here on the Cale Clark Show. We know that sleep is important for our physical health, but not during the show. Not during the show. We know that sleep is important for our physical health, but research shows it's also really important for mental health too, because having a solid 8 hours of shut-eye is the foundation on which all the other happiness habits rest. But the problem, she says, is getting that right amount is really difficult to do. There's always that one last email to send before going to bed, or a quick peek at your Twitter feed, or that new Netflix show to check out. There is a lot of stuff out there that you could be doing when you should be sleeping. But this year, she says, try to embrace some healthier sleep hygiene. So one thing you can do that really does help, ban devices from your bedroom. And that might be easier said than done, but you know, if you can get these screens out of your bedroom, as she says, try to read a book or a magazine instead, something that's actually like physical paper. Before bed, obviously, we know that there's certain light emanating from screens. I think, is it called blue light, Lucas? I can't remember. Yeah, blue light is apparently bad for you right before you go to bed. And again, this having a proper 8 hours of sleep, there are certain toxins in your brain and plaques in your brain that build up that can only be removed by getting a good night's sleep. And your brain kind of self-cleans a little bit. But she says, you know, make sure that your bedroom is dedicated for sleeping as much as possible. Because if you make your bedroom into an office, and some people have, obviously, during COVID, working from home, and maybe if you're living in a small apartment, you really don't have a choice. But as much as possible, don't let your sleeping quarters become an office, become a lounge, become a home cinema, because your body gets confused. And I was reading this in another book, too. Another New York Times bestseller by James Clear called Atomic Habits. Interesting book. And he says as much as possible, try to get these dedicated spaces because your body cues into this. And that's one of the things that was taken away from people when they were working from home is that, you know, when you're in the workplace, when you're in the office, your body knows and your mind knows that it's time to work. And somehow it kicks your mindset into gear. You're prepared and ready for what you need to do. And the same is true when you're at home, that your bedroom should be a place where you're getting ready to sleep. So one of the things that Lori Santos says is, you know, have a ritual. She's big into rituals. So have a pre-sleep ritual. She suggests having a glass of warm herbal tea, having a bath. I would probably say have a Bavarian wheat beer, but doesn't really matter what your ritual is, as long as it kind of helps you wind down and just give priority to your sleep. Like, make it part of your schedule. Schedule it in. Don't leave it to chance. And that can really help. And I think that's just something really practical that we can all do. Just try to sleep a little bit more. So she says rest and move. The other thing is exercise. We need to move our physical bodies. We all know this. We're not getting enough exercise, but just a little bit. Even just going for a walk around the block can help a lot. And she mentions a study that found that doing a half an hour of cardio on a stationary bike, maybe on a Peloton or something like that, and they're $600 off. I saw a commercial last night. I'm really kind of tempted. That's a big investment. Anyways, doing a half hour cardio on a stationary bike, studies have shown that reduces things like tension, anger, feelings of depression, fatigue. And it's kind of counterintuitive to think that if I exercise, I'm going to be less tired, because when we're really bagged and we're not, the last thing you want to do is go for a run or you know, do some sit-ups or something like that, or hop on the Peloton. But it actually does work. It actually gives you a little bit of energy and vitality. So the effects of this exercise, reducing stress, reducing tension, anger, all that stuff, it's been shown to last for over 12 hours. So just a little bit of exercise, even 30 minutes, goes a long way towards improving our mood and happiness. So that's really important too, because we know that we're a body-soul unity. And we need to do things like take care of our physical body, eat better, sleep better, exercise more. We know we need to do this. And that does improve our overall well-being. That things that happen in the body can affect us in other ways spiritually, just like if you're not in a good place spiritually, that can manifest itself maybe in physical ways. I don't know. Anyways, so something to think about. And then the number one thing that she says, this is the last thing that Professor Lori Santos says, and it's the last big takeaway from her course that she teaches on the science of happiness. And if you want to react to this, you can call in 888-914-9149. If any of this is resonating with you, you can call in on the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, or you can hit me up on Twitter at Cale Clark. The number one thing she says is be kind. Be kind. That's how you can be happier. Be kind to others. And she mentions that in times like we've endured over the last year or so with the pandemic, it's so tempting to turn inward and only think about yourself, your own needs, treating yourself. But the science says this is actually backwards. The best way to promote your self-care is to actually provide care for other people. And this is backed by research. We get a happiness boost from doing nice things for other people. And this is something, by the way, that's mentioned even in the Bible. St. Paul says in the scriptures, and it's one of the teachings of Jesus that's not in the Gospels, but Paul mentions it. He says that the Lord Jesus taught that it's more blessed to give rather than receive. And we instinctively know this. When we give somebody a gift and it really makes them happy, we feel really good about that. When we pay it forward, you know, those viral moments when in a drive-through line, somebody pays for the coffee of the person behind them or whatever the case may be. And then it just becomes this kind of conga line of everybody paying for the person's order behind them. And it's just kind of passing on this little bit of joy. And so research shows that people who report the happiest, the scores of being the most happiness, they're the most focused on other people. They donate more of their time. They donate more of their money to charity. They engage in more random acts of kindness. And so this is actually an evidence-based way that you can bolster your happiness. Do something good for somebody else. If you're working remotely, she suggests that if you're working remotely, one thing you could do is donate some of the money that you saved on gas for a good cause. Or just check in on somebody else who's struggling. And that can help you to feel better. And this is, again, something that Jesus recommended as well. Surprise, surprise. Love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And love your neighbor as yourself. Now, you do have to love yourself. It's very much in the third place. But this spells joy. Jesus first, others second, yourself last. Don't forget yourself. But when you take care of other people, you kind of are taking care of yourself, too. It's a side bonus because you feel happier. So that's what we need to do. We also need to be, and like I said, we have to be compassionate towards ourselves and kind towards ourselves. She says this too, when she talks about being kind, Professor Lori Santos. She says, self-compassion means remembering that you're human and that just like everybody else on the planet, you're doing the best you can in some pretty tough times. Giving yourself a little bit of kindness doesn't just feel good. It's also a surprisingly effective way to meet your new year goals. Now, she wrote this article around the start of the actual calendar new year, but that's kind of interesting because I think it was yesterday was the beginning of the Jewish new year, right, Producer Lucas? So Shana Tova to everybody who's celebrating that. And I read actually something on Twitter from somebody who comes from a Jewish background. He's not practicing, but apparently there's a tradition associated with the Jewish new year in which you're supposed to take bread, little pieces of bread, and just kind of cast it upon the water. And part of that is just sort of letting go of past mistakes. This idea of being kind of merciful with yourself, recognizing that you're human, that you're going to make mistakes, and just not dwelling on it so much, just moving on, learning the lesson, moving on and doing better next time. I think we need a lot of this as Catholics too. we struggle with Catholic guilt in a lot of ways. I think there is something to that. And we really need to believe when we go to confession, when we hear these words, I absolve you of your sins. And again, it's not Father Joe who's saying this. It's Jesus Christ borrowing the vocal cords of the priest. You really are forgiven. And you need to kind of set yourself free to forgive yourself. So do unto yourself as you would do unto others. Give yourself the benefit of the doubt. That's what Lori Santos says in her article. And so these are really, really good tips, I think, from this course that she teaches, the most popular course in the history of Yale University on the science of happiness. And I think it can help us, too, as we try to become happy. And we can really only be happy in our Lord. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. And, you know, there's a lot of people that are out there sort of proffering different methods of happiness and how to get happier. And in one, well, actually a couple of groups that want to do this, that are trying to get you to a place where they think you'll be happy, are people that knock on your door. And they are, it's not the Avon lady. They're people from the LDS organization, the Latter-day Saints, otherwise known as the Mormons, and also the Jehovah's Witnesses. And they come to your door very frequently, and they want to tell you another gospel. And here's a little snippet about something that's coming up tomorrow on The Faith Explained. It's a new series that we're starting. Check this out. What do you do when the doorbell rings and there are strangers at your door? Shiny, happy people that want to tell you about another gospel of Jesus Christ. Hi, I'm Cale Clark. Join me for our next series on the Faith Explained program called A Catholic Response to Mormonism and Jehovah's Witnesses. You'll learn how to respond to the questions that they have for you and how you can share with them the truth about Jesus and His Catholic Church. Thursday, 12:30 Central on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. So that's starting tomorrow. You're not going to want to miss this. We get a lot of requests about how we can respond to Mormons and Jehovah's Witnesses with Catholic truth. So I'm going to give you some tips on that. I'm going to tell you what these groups think, what they believe. And again, one of the things I said, Producer Lucas, as we're preparing for this series of episodes on the Faith Explained show, is that think about the Jehovah's Witnesses. They spend between 60 and 100 hours every month going door to door. Now, I think they're wrong in their beliefs, but you have to admire their zeal. And they are trying to help you. They don't think that they're being evil or anything like that. And unfortunately, these people are very, very good people. They've been caught up in an organization that does not teach the truth, unfortunately. But they are looking for happiness in God just as much as anybody else. They're on the wrong path. We have to help them. But they are trying to help you be happy. We need to redirect them a little bit. So I hope that people will tune into this series on the Faith Explained show starting tomorrow. Have you received a visit, Lucas, in the last few months at your home?
No, I haven't. But I did have a lot of interesting conversations when I was at university with Mormons. And yeah, you're not joking, Cale. When they know all of the points to talking points to make sure that they can try and trip you up, and they're really genuine, like great people, but we got to be prepared to have a response. So I personally am looking forward to listening to this.
Yeah, and some of my best friends growing up in high school were Mormons, and there's this one gal that I was kind of in love with at the time, and she didn't want to date me because of my Catholic background, and man.
You know, actually, what actually is interesting, the friends that I had that were Mormon, this was before I was Catholic, and like they were, it's actually funny, we were having conversations, and like they were trying to convert me, I was trying to convert them, but they knew I was Protestant, but then when I had mentioned to them that I was also looking at Catholicism, they started to take a different tone with me, and it almost was like they got more offended, like I was like, okay, you're Protestant, we want to try and convert you, but it's like, oh, don't, like, being Catholic. And I was thinking about it, and I was like, why? And I think it's because the Catholic Church is actually the only church that rivals their own claim. And that is that they profess that the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is founded by Jesus Christ. The Catholic Church makes that exact same claim. So
we'll talk about that.
One of them is true, one of them is false. But Protestants don't make that claim necessarily. You know, their founder is another human person, so
that's an interesting angle. Yeah, we'll cover that. We'll also tell you about things that they don't mention when they knock on your door. Well, it's actually a little bit different. Jehovah's Witnesses are very upfront about what they believe. They'll tell you straight up. They actually think that Jesus is Saint Michael the Archangel. They think that Jesus is the same person as Michael the Archangel, and they're not shy about telling you what they believe. They don't believe in the Trinity, things like that. But Mormons are a little bit more esoteric. The first time they knock on your door, they don't tell you that they think that every Mormon male will become a god on his own planet someday. And I'm not making that up. Talk about upward mobility. My goodness. So we'll let you know about all this stuff. And that's going to be starting tomorrow on the Faith Explained program, our mini-series called A Catholic Response to Mormonism and Jehovah's Witnesses. So check that out. We're going to go to the phones real quick. Andrew is in San Diego. Hi, Andrew.
How are you doing, Cale?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, so Just a question about, so, I mean, I just turned on the radio and I was hearing about the 5 points and I got the tail end of it. About how it aligns with what we're really called to do in our faith life as Catholics, outside of kind of our own will and pursuit in the kind of the secular arena that kind of Dr. Santos seems to be speaking to. But on the other side of that, what's prescribed by the saints and Our Lady, for example, in Fatima, with the First Saturday devotion and the rosary and, you know, frequent visits to the Blessed Sacrament. Because it looks like what the prerogative that's kind of being lended to is happiness. And I don't know if that's necessarily what the church says our prerogative should be, which is the will of God. And because it sounds like it's a good way to bring people into the faith because people ultimately want to be happy. But the truth is, in our Catholic faith, we're not always, look at the saints. I mean, none of the saints, they found happiness, but I don't know if it's in the sense that is being, you know, kind of spoken about with Dr. Santos or Professor Santos.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Andrew, for sure. And if you go back and maybe you can check the podcast later if you missed some of it, I did try to mix in the fact that, yeah, she's coming from a completely secular point of view here. She's looking at social science studies and things like that. But there's more to it than that. We can obviously mix in a lot of our faith. We need to look at things from a faith-based perspective. But I think that's a really good point that you're saying, Andrew, is that you think about the martyrs, right? John the Baptist wasn't exactly feeling that great about being locked up in Herod's fortress prison and, you know, getting his head chopped off. I mean, but yet he was right in the middle of God's will for him. And so it doesn't always feel good. But I think that when we do God's will, yeah, suffering is often involved, and we all have to go through suffering, and we have to sanctify that. But we can have peace, at least knowing that we're in God's will, we're doing God's will, even when we have to suffer for it. And that can kind of bring a different kind of joy, I think. And that's maybe the difference between happiness and joy, is that happiness kind of depends on what's happening, as they say, and joy is that deep down, you know, experience that surpasses all understanding. The peace and joy that God gives us is not that which the world gives us. And I think that's a really good point that you're making, Andrew. I think that's kind of what you're getting at here.
Exactly. Ultimately, you hit it on the head with just, you know, our salvation kind of on one side, and whether it's in God's will for us to truly have this kind of picturesque, ideal image of what you know, society sees as being happy, which I think Professor Santos may be kind of leaning towards when she has these 5 points that she's prescribing.
I think you're right. I think you're totally right. And I think that I'm glad that you called, because that's a great perspective and a needed perspective that we can add to this. Having said that, I think we can also incorporate some of the stuff she's talking about too. They can't hurt. It's not, as long as it's not contrary to our faith. But yeah, obviously the will of God for us has to come first. And that often involves some not so pleasant experiences, especially when it comes to suffering and persecution for the faith that we sometimes have to endure, and that our Lord Himself endured as well. So I really appreciate that call, Andrew. I really, really do thank you for calling in. That was a great point. Andrew calling from San Diego. Thank you for that, Andrew. And please call in anytime. Got to take a quick break, but we'll be back right after this with more on the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Helping you keep your mind off traffic and on the more important things in life. It's Cale Clark on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome back. You know, you're running out of time to get Father Rocky's free book, Marriage Insurance, 12 Rules to Live By. You can get it right now at relevantradio.com/marriage. No shipping, no handling, no problems. And we're going to try to deal with all your marriage problems. Not that you have any. I hope you don't. But you can have a strong marriage, you can have a happy marriage, you can have a permanent marriage. Father Rocky's book, Marriage Insurance, 12 Rules to Live By, will help you discover how. And again, we only have a limited number of these books, and it's only available for just a couple more days at relevantradio.com/marriage. Please let other people know about that too. Share that link with them. Hey, you know who else wrote a lot about marriage was Pope John Paul II, his theology, the body, love, and responsibility. And he also wrote a lot about work. And obviously, we're kind of back in the work groove now. Most people's summer vacations are over. Labor Day is over. And I wanted to talk about this yesterday, but we had so many good phone calls yesterday, I wasn't able to get to it. Our friend Father Patrick Mary Briscoe, Dominican priest, great friend of the program, he wrote a nice little piece on Alatea, a website of which he's the managing editor, about Pope St. John Paul II and his thoughts on work and rest. Because I think when we get back into work mode, sometimes we forget that we do have to have that balance. And in 1981, J.P. II wrote an encyclical on the dignity of human labor. And one of the things he talked about was that there's really two aspects to work. There's the objective dimension of work, and that's kind of the output, what's actually produced, the product of your work. If you're writing a book, it's your book. If you're a writer, if you're digging ditches, it's the pile of dirt by the side of the road. And there's many times I thought, man, at least if I was digging ditches, I would know exactly, you know, the outcome of my work. Is it really helping with souls? But so that's the objective dimension of your work. But there's also the subjective dimension of your work. And that's to do with the worker himself or the worker herself. And he talked a lot about in this encyclical letter about you can find out whether an economic system is a just system when you figure out how it thinks about workers, not just work, but workers, and what is due to them. And that includes their rest. And this is really cool what J.P. II said about this, that we have to obviously subdue the earth, dominate it, because we're kind of commanded to do so by God. We're created in the image of God as a subjective being capable of acting in a rational way. And we kind of extend God's creation or perfect it by our work, that we take these kind of raw materials and we make something. We make something. So we're kind of co-creators with God in a certain sense. And one of the things that the Pope said was that the one who carries out this work, whatever that work might be, there's nothing immoral about the kind of work that you do, any honest work can be sanctified, and we can find God in and through our work. The person who's doing that work is a free subject, and we're not objects. And this is one thing that J.P. II used to talk about all the time. We are not objects to be used, but we are persons to be loved. And that obviously came through in his work on marriage and human sexuality, especially in his book, Love and Responsibility. He said, we're not objects to be used, but persons to be loved. And so we're subjects, we're not objects. And so this is really the dignity of work. The one who labors is important, not just the work itself. And that's the problem with materialism and this materialistic culture. As Father Briscoe writes, he says, materialism mistakenly prioritizes the objective output of work rather than the subjective dimension of labor. So it's focused more on the product, the outcome, the thing that you want, you know, as a materialist, you want this thing. But what about the people? What about the people behind that work? You can't treat people as a mere instrument of production. We are a subject of work. We are the true makers of this work, the creators of this work. So as in all things, the human person is the end, is the subject, not the means to an end. Whenever we try to use people, we have to love people and use things. And whenever we flip that around, whenever we love things, we usually use people to get those things. And this can happen sometimes when workers' rights are abused and in materialism. And so Father Briscoe starts talking about the Pope and his comments on the right to have a rest. And we are sometimes resisting a rest, as it were. I stole that pun from Scott Hahn, resisting a rest, get it? And God rested as well. God worked, and we have to imitate God in his work, especially Jesus in his work as a carpenter working with St. Joseph. He was probably a great worker, of course. But we also have to imitate God in our rest as well. And not just our regular weekly rest, but also this incurs vacation time as well, which most of us are done with now, at least for a little bit. That's important. And every day as well, not working for, 10, 12 hours a day. Your life's going to get out of balance. And so this is a great quote from John Paul II. Man, and obviously that means man and woman, ought to imitate God both in working and also in resting. And I think that's a really tough thing for some of us, to imitate God in rest. And I think, I don't know, this is something I want to develop a little bit more in a future episode, but yet we really have to do this. We really have to make sure that every week we really live the Sabbath well, and also really every day too, have a little Sabbath every day in it, because every day is kind of a microcosm of the week, and every week is kind of a microcosm of a month and of a life. And so, you know, every night, as Ronald Knox, the great convert from Anglicanism, said, it's kind of like when we go to sleep, it's like a little death, and then we have a little resurrection in the morning. And so, gotta live well, and that includes resting, proper time to spend time with family, friends, and God. Don't forget your prayer. Don't forget your prayer. And I hope that you've had a great rest with me for an hour. You're able to sort of sit down and we can have a chat. Glad you joined me on the Cale Clark Show. We will be back tomorrow. Tim Marie's up on tap, followed by the Family Rosary Across America. Lucas Holt produced. Patrick Alog took your calls. Rich Gannon tomorrow, NFL preview. Not for all the show, but for part of it. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.